Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Shift. I hope you guys are all well. I'm very excited about this week's episode. It's with Dr. Batsheva. She's a sexual therapist, and I read her book. It's called Sex Points, and you guys can get it, I think, today. Or if you go onto her Instagram, and I'll have a link in the description to go get the book. But it was absolutely brilliant. Like, I was able to fly through it because it was so interesting. It was also funny. Fantastic book. Mainly now talks about like women's problems, but at the end there's also a section on men's problems and kind of us as women understanding that. And for men too, it's a great read for you to understand what women go through. So really would highly recommend it. I even, one of the lads, I gave it to him to have a look, and he was like, jeez, this is great. So get the book. It basically talks about kind of issues with your sex life, but all the multiple reasons and factors that could be. So not just like, for an example, if you're like, can't orgasm, and you're like, oh, it's just because I'm in my head, but actually that there could be all these other reasons. And so she does a 100-point system, like a questionnaire. You fill it in and then you figure out where your points are, and she has like a diagram. It's arousal, desire, pain, orgasm. And so you could be like multiple things. It could be you need to focus on figuring out how to fix your desire, or like pain management, or she has a chapter on working on orgasms or arousal and the difference between all of these. So it's just brilliant, and I have a chat with her and we talk about everything, and I'm very excited for you guys to hear this episode. So I'm going to start it and I'll talk to you at the end. Oh, and also before I start this episode, if you want to sign up to the Patreon, the video is up there. So the Patreon.com/The Shift Podcast, and there's also solo episodes as well where I just talk more about my private, you know, life, like a little diary entry sort of style solo apps. So yeah, please sign up. It's pay what you want for now. And there's next week's episode, is it'll be up there as well. So because we already recorded that last week. So yeah, go have a little Patreon subscribe. Because you know, it's start of the month, so you get loads of content. And anyway, I'm just gonna start this episode. So enjoy.
How are you?
I love your studio.
I know, yeah. My beautiful bed, which awesome. Is not made.
You can just make a background of your bed and have that like everywhere you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it shows my art.
Yes, absolutely. Where are you?
I'm in Astoria.
Queens.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm from Ireland originally.
No, obviously. But I just didn't know if like we were on the same time zone right now.
Where are you in New York?
Yeah, I'm in Riverdale in the Bronx.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. I read your whole book.
Oh, wow. Okay. Somebody who's interviewing me who actually read the book. Are we already taping or no?
We're taping. I did skip like a couple of bits. I skipped the last bit where it said, what therapist do you need? And then I skipped a bit about pain, just a little bit. But I just, read through it, but I find it very interesting.
Oh, good. Clearly pain wasn't your issue because you wouldn't have skipped that. So now I know a lot about you already.
But I know a lot of friends who have suffered with pain as well. So I thought it was great. Like everything you hit on, I've heard either people have wrote into the podcast that's been their issue, or even friends. So it's great to, like, even for myself, I found it very interesting. It wasn't like painful reading through it, like being like, oh, no,
Thank God. That was my whole, I have to be honest, my kids laugh at this book, not because they think it's about sex, because they're, God, Lord knows they're used to my talking about sex nonstop, but they're like, it's too chatty and friendly. I'm like, it's supposed to be chatty and friendly. That's what it's supposed to be. So that makes me feel really, really good, Katie.
Good, because that's what I liked about it. There's parts of it where I was laughing, and it makes it seem Like, I know it, these are all serious issues, but it makes it seem not serious. It makes it seem very much like, okay, you control this. You can work on this.
You can do this. You could. That was the entire point of this book. Like, people think of sex as being, am I going all over the place? Do you want me to shut up or do you want me to
No, it's great. This is perfect. Okay. This is exactly what the podcast is.
Perfect. I know. People always think of sex as, like, especially women, often if their sex life isn't working well, they don't want to think about it. They feel like there's something broken about them. There's something wrong. It's like, they'll never fix it. It feels so hopeless. And everything about this book is trying to say, it's not a magic thing. It's actually pretty simple. If somebody makes it clear to you, and you can fix this, you can make this better. I promise you, you can make this better, Katie. That is, like, so it makes me feel so good for you to say that, because that means the world to me.
No, good, because I even feel like what we were trying to hit on with this podcast was just making it not seem as, like, shameful or hard to talk about. When it's easy to talk about, you're able to figure out stuff. It's like anything.
Totally. And if it wasn't your podcast now, I would say to you, I need you to tell me how you came up with this idea of this podcast and how you started doing it. And you could tell me if you want, then you could just edit it out.
Well, actually, I used to host it with a guy who's famous in Ireland, and we stopped hosting it together just because he just during the pandemic was like, I don't want to do this podcast anymore. Like, I think your assistant emailed him and then he sent the email to me and he was like, oh, Katie, how do you pronounce your name? Batsheva?
Batsheva. It's hard. Nobody gets it right. Dr. Batsheva. And my last name is Marcus. He's super easy. And you don't have to call me doctor. You can just say that. If you can get that out. And I'm like, I'm laughing. I say to my patients, I'm Dr. Marcus. You can call me Batsheva. If that doesn't scare you, you can call me Dr. Marcus if it's too hard to pronounce Batsheva.
No, that's great. But yeah, we just he came to me and he said he wanted to do a podcast that had an Irish woman on it. He's originally from America, but he lives in Ireland. And just to talk about sex without shame and kind of sex topics and make it less taboo. And he was a bit nervous at the start that I'd be too innocent for it. But actually then he was like, oh, that worked out really well, because during the podcast, like, it was the first time I watched porn. It was the first time I used a vibrator. Like, no one was talking to me about this stuff. I didn't masturbate until I moved over to America. So
what made him come to you then? You were not a masturbation, porn, and vibrator queen.
No, I did a comedy set on he was working at this big club here, and I did a set there, and he even said it to my best friend before. He said, I've asked Katie, but I think she might be too innocent, but I'm gonna do a test episode with her. And he said, just because I was open to talk about the subjects, he was like, okay, this is actually, because he was perfect. Like, yeah, I think a lot of women messaged in them being like that they were more aligned with me, as in they wanted to know but they didn't know, or they were afraid.
You were very relatable to them. So I think that's so true. I feel like there's this weird thing, Katie, about sex, which is that everybody thinks that everybody knows more than they do. Yeah. Right? Like, everybody thinks that they're abnormal. Everybody thinks something wrong with me, I'm abnormal, or everybody knows more than I do. And I need to, for people to know that is just not true, because sex is so individual. Like, it's so individual. So it doesn't, you know, I got a letter through whatever the other day from this woman who's back to dating after she was married for 20 years or something, divorced. And the idea of starting with a new partner is totally scary to her. Like, what do I do? And I'm like, everybody, when you start with a new partner, it's a brand new experience. Like, we're all nervous and we're all scared. And, like, just know that he's probably just as scared as you are. So just wanted to say that.
No, which is great. And which is great for people to hear. Like, even I, like, I'm very comfortable now 2 years later talking about sex, but still when I get a new partner, I'm like, you know, even I love giving blowjobs, but a blowjob with a new partner, I'm like, what if you like something different? So you just have to, it's like the first day you start a new job. It's always nerve-wracking the first day.
It's always nerve-wracking. Yeah, totally. But the truth is, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, Katie, and I'd be actually curious what your thoughts are about this as well, which is that nervousness, that scariness, that's hot. There's something kind of hot about that. And that, you know, so sometimes people will get in touch with me or are in relationships with patients who've been in a relationship for a long time and start to get boring and dull. And so they're maybe thinking about doing something new, but they feel like so awkward about it. Like, you know, oh my God, if I've been with this guy for, like, I don't know, a year or two, and if I ask him to tie me up now, like, oh my God, like, what's he going to think? And I'm like, that awkwardness is great, because that, if you think about early in a relationship when the sex is the most hot, it's often because there's that, like, little sense of danger, just enough, just a little touch of danger and scaredness and awkwardness. And that could be great. So,
yeah, I like that as well. That when you're saying that, it reminds me of when you said in the book that a lot of people will say if there's problems in a long-term relationship, and it's stuff that we've had people on the podcast say before, oh, you just need to communicate, you need to talk. So it was great hearing your perspective where it's like, oh, actually, maybe it's more like that, bringing in novelty again. Or
yeah, I think we have gotten to a place in our society where we somehow privilege like verbal communication and talking over physical. So almost always when there starts to be a sexual problem in the relationship, women for sure, but men, I think also start thinking, oh, there must be problems in the relationship. Well, there may be problems in the relationship because the sex is bad and because you aren't having sex anymore. That may be why. Why do you assume, why do we always run down that rabbit hole of assuming that just because there's a problem with sex life, it means there's other big problems in the relationship. And I feel like it creates all kinds of problems. And some of that is because, you know, if you go to a therapist, and I always joke around, like if you go to a therapist and you say to the therapist, our sex life is in the toilet. And the therapist says, okay, well, we're going to work on your communication and then everything's going to get better. I say like, grab your checkbook and run for the hills. Like bad advice. Like you can be in a good relationship and still have crappy sex. So I always say like, you want a therapist who understands that the sex contributes to the relationship also. Like you, if you make the sex better, sometimes the whole relationship gets better. And I could talk about that for an hour and a half. So I'm not going to, you tell, you know, yes.
Yeah. No, but it is great to hear as well that there's like, well, obviously now people will have to read the book, but there's just so many other factors to consider. And that was the thing reading the book as well, is like, Jesus, there is so many factors that I never even considered. So let's say you have the 100-point system. So people do fill in a questionnaire and then that can kind of figure out where maybe the problems are.
Did you take the questionnaire?
I actually didn't take the questionnaire, but I should have. But you know what?
No, it's fine. And it's electronic. So if you buy the book, you can do it manually. But also there's a link. So you have a pre-order copy. You have like a... Yeah. Fancy person galley copy. But so you don't have the link. But if you go to my website, Dr. Bacheva, well, you have to buy the book. The book gives you the link and you can do the whole thing online. So I can get you the link so you can do it and just push some buttons as opposed to sit there and add up. I don't know about you, but I don't love math. So adding up 3 and 4 and 7, it's like, so are you kidding me, Bacheva? Anyway, so yeah. So anyhow, so you didn't do the questionnaire, but you like the point system.
Yeah, and I can see just from reading the questionnaire. Now, right now, I'm in a position where I'm not in a relationship. I'm horny all the time. So I'd say I'm probably high up on the 100-point system. I've dealt with a lot of shame. I'm like, whatever, I'll, you know, do most things.
You're in a great place.
Great place. But I can see from the point system when I was in a serious relationship back in Ireland, like just reading it, I was like, oh, that was me. And it would have been great to have understood it at the time. I think for me, my issue was probably birth control, and definitely because when I came off it, my sex drive
came back.
But I could see even the other points as well. I was like, oh yeah, if I had have been able to understand it a bit better. Now in hindsight, I'm delighted that relationship ended. But if I had been like, you know, in my 30s, wanted to keep in that relationship, it would have been good to know for sure.
So yeah, so let me just spend a minute talking about how this point system works.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, great. So So we tend to think, like, women will come into my office and they'll like plunk themselves down on a chair and they'll say like, what's broken with my sex life, Bacheva? Like, let's fix it. Like, as if it's a light switch, like there's one thing that's broken, let's get it working. Like, let's say it's, you know, my relationship or my shame with my body, or I'm too busy at work, or my birth control pills. And what I have found over the years is really, really helpful to my patients is that stop thinking about this as like a binary on off 1-2 situation. And let's start thinking about it as you need 100 points. You have to hit 100-point threshold in order to have a good sex life. And so that 100, those 100 points can come from all the things you and I started talking about, Katie, right? It can come from birth control pills being on or off of them. It can come from other medications that you're on. It can come from hormones that you have. It can come from your relationship. It can come from the hot newness of the relationship. It can come from using of toys or vibrators. It can come from your like physical state. Like, are you exhausted? Is that doing things to your hormones? This, everything is interrelated with everything else. And when you get enough points, or there's enough points coming from different places, and you hit that 100-point threshold, you're going to have good sex and it's going to be fine. But when you don't hit that 100-point threshold, you start feeling like you're crazy, but you're just not interested in sex, or the sex isn't working well, if you don't get turned on, or there's pain. And so the questionnaire, basically, you do the questionnaire at the end, you end up with these four areas, four quadrants. desire. Do I want to have sex? Arousal. Do I get turned on? Which is a different thing, which we could talk about. Pain. Are there pain issues that are creating a problem? And orgasm. Am I having trouble with orgasm? And how are those things? What am I scoring on those things? And how are those things affecting all the other quadrants? So does that sound really confusing?
No, not at all. And I think it's really good for people, because I know any of my friends who ever had an issue, or even people who have been on sometimes, will just say, oh, it could be one thing. But I think what's good about this is it's saying it could be multiple things.
Exactly. So, I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to use let's take a 19-year-old woman named Tammy. I'm just going to use this as an example. And she has 90 points from her own physical hormone profile, right? She's got she's in great health, everything's working. She's got a lot of testosterone in her system because she's young, and estrogen in her system. She's 90 points. She can have sex with anybody. She can meet somebody at, the county fair, and she could go into the back of the barn and have great sex with this person. She only needs 10 points. She still looks at the guy. The guy's kind of hot. So that's it. She's at 100. That she has sex and it's all good and it's all fine. So now let's take Tammy and let's say it's 5 years later and she meets this great new guy. Give me a name, Katie.
Paul.
Paul. She meets Paul. That's male. That's the name of one of our sex therapists in the men's center. He's going to be so flattered when he hears this. Anyway, Tammy meets Paul and it's hot, new, and erotic. So that's 30 points. And she falls madly in love with Paul. So that's another 30 points. So now she's got 150 points, if I did my math right. Yes. And she's great. And even if Paul acts like an asshole sometimes, and even if work is overwhelming and she doesn't have time in her life, she's losing 30 or 40 points. It doesn't matter. She's still over that 100 points and she's doing just fine. But let's say Tammy marries Paul and they're now 30 and her hormones are down a little bit. So now she only has 70 points from herself and it's not so hot and erotic, but she's still in love with him. So she's kind of at that 100 point and she's doing okay. Her sex life is fine. Until they have a kid banging at the door, that takes away some points. Or her hormone levels go down, or she gets on birth control pills and that takes away some points. So now Tammy's not doing well at all. She's at 90 points. She doesn't. We'll go to a gynecologist, and the gynecologist will say
you broke up there after 90 points. I think the internet dropped a little bit. So you said,
sorry, I'll start up again. Yes. So now Tammy's at 90 points and she's not doing well at all anymore. She's not interested in having sex. She's kind of dragging herself to have sex. She's not interested. She starts to feel like maybe she's getting some pain because they're not having sex very often. So what normally happens is the women then go to their gynecologist in this situation, Katie. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, I'll keep nodding.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so normally they go to their gynecologist and the gynecologist, trying their best to help, will say something like, well, Tammy, how was it when you were on vacation? And Tammy will say, it was fine when I was on vacation, actually. And then the doctor will say, well, then it must be psychological, Tammy. And then Tammy leaves and she feels worse than when she started because she doesn't live in Cancun. She can't stay in Cancun. She's not living on vacation, right? I come back and I say to Tammy, yes, you're right. Vacation gave you 10 more points. That's great. That just tells me that you're not that below the threshold that we can't find you the points. Now let's look together at what things, changes we can make in your medications. And there's plenty of those. Hormonally, what can we do? Can we work on your fantasy life a little bit and see if we can get that going a little better? Can we work on the way you see your partner a little bit differently? Can we work on setting up your life so the kids aren't walking in on you when you're having sex? Can we get rid of that little bit of pain? All of those pieces are going to get your point profile up till you're back to having good sex life. I'm sorry. That was a very, very, very long speech, Katie.
No. It's great because it is saying, because you're dead right. And people will hear that, when you go on holidays. And that's not fair. Well, I can only have sex then once a year.
Exactly.
Or multiple sex. It's just bringing... how can you make your current environment so solve the problems for every single day?
That's the idea. So Sex Points is really trying to say, I want you, reader, to have a really good sex life. And it's good. And I think that is really doable for everybody. And here's a little guideline on how to do it. So that's how I try to set it up kind of like choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
If you have low points here, try looking at chapter 8, 11, and 12. right?
Like, no, exactly. And it had different stories. So it had stories from women who are menopausal, has stories from women who are younger. And like even what you said about hormones, like I didn't know that your hormone, like that could affect your sex drive. I had no idea. And it makes sense because my personal experience was I was on Dianet, which is for your skin. So reading your book, I was like, oh, that makes sense because it took away my testosterone, which I didn't even know as a woman I have. That helps for sex. Like there's literally, we should all go through like years course on learning this stuff. This is like, this should be like brushing your teeth. We should know about this.
No, it's crazy, Katie. And I think that one of the things that's, it's kind of new because I feel like until maybe 10 years ago or 15 years ago, everybody always said it was all psychological. I didn't freaking know what psychological means. Psychological is... So it's such a reaction to what's happening chemically in your body, right? Like they used to think when you had your period, when you're on your period, that women went like nuts, right? They got moody. Well, the moodiness was because of hormonal imbalances. Like what are you thinking, folks? When you see, Katie, when you see, or we used to pre-COVID, see two 17-year-olds who were like climbing all over each other at the movie theater. It wasn't because he sent her flowers or they just had a really meaningful conversation, right? Like their hormones are raging. They couldn't raise their hormones. So why do we still, then all of a sudden you're 45 and you're not that interested in sex, but nobody thinks about the hormones anymore. Oh, that's not important. Like, the disconnect is mind boggling. Once exactly what you're saying, Katie, like it's so mind boggling once you think about it. So the experience you had with what people have it with Accutane or they have it with birth control pills. Do you know that dermatologists give women birth control pills to help their skin? Well, that's great, except that they're anti-androgenic. They just kill all the testosterone in your body. And then these poor 18-year-old girls are like, I'm not interested in sex. Something's wrong with me. It must be asexual. And I'm like, no. Do you know what I mean? Like somebody has just robbed you of every last element of testosterone. I'm sorry.
I agree with it because they put me on it for 4 years. Now, I haven't, that was 7 years ago and I'll never go on birth control again, even though my gynecologist is trying to insist on it. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not doing it. But the thing with that was, yeah, it cleared up my skin and that's great, but you clear up your skin because you want to feel more attractive. And in turn, then I wasn't enjoying sex. And then secondly, as soon as I went off it, because it's not, you have to go off it at some stage, my skin just came back bad again. Now it's fine now, but I think maybe in hindsight, if I had just lived with it for a few years, it probably would have cleared up quicker. Or, you know,
birth control pills are so complicated. I mean, some people don't, just so you know, Katie, we don't understand. We're just at the beginning of this. We don't understand. Some women have receptors that do fine. They're on birth control pills and it does not destroy their libidos or their interest in sex or their ability to get aroused or anything like that. But some women, immediately react or react a few years later. And some women, because your vagina, and I talk about this in the book, your vagina is so sensitive to hormonal balances. Your vagina is the first thing to feel it. And so some women, they get on birth control pills and they start having pain after a few months or 6 months. And they go back to the doctor and they're like, I'm having pain when I'm having sex. It's killing me when I'm having intercourse. And the doctor's like, well, it's not the birth control. I'm like, of course it's the birth control. But that doesn't mean everybody's like that. So if you're listening to this and you're happy on your birth control and you're okay, that's great. There is a lot of women that's true about. So I always want to make sure that that's clear.
And so for women who do have the hormonal the bad effects with birth control, you recommended IUD. You were saying that there's way less hormones in it, which I didn't know because I would have been nervous getting because I just would have read hormonal IUD. And I was like, but after reading this, I was like, oh, maybe I should get an IUD.
I think you should think about an IUD. We love IUD. So the IUDs come in a lot of different kinds. So the copper IUD has no hormones whatsoever, but the copper IUD, and it's good for 10 years, but it does make your period come usually stronger than you normally have it. So if you're somebody who really does not like that bleeding thing happening, that may not be the one for you. The Mirena IUD comes with a little bit of progesterone, but it's really local progesterone. So it really is intended, and mostly for most women, stays just locally in your uterus. And so it doesn't have all the effects that changing your hormones have. That's not to say that there aren't some women who still react to it, but we love the IUD for young women. It seems, and it also makes your period like weaker and weaker until it disappears. So for people who really don't love having their period, I'm like, go get an IUD, like just go get it because it's going to make your life easier. That's so you should, Katie. We can talk about your birth control.
My gynecologist hates me because I'm just like, nope. And I use condoms, but she's like, that's not 100. And I'm like, oh, I'm fine.
I think using condoms is great. As I'm you know, but I just think it's like a little bit of a pain sometimes. Like it would be, if you want to not have, well, you're, if you don't have a steady partner anyway, so you should probably be using condoms regularly anyway, even if it's not just birth control, it's like other, you know, STI issues.
So, yeah, I guess I'll have to think about it if I ever get into a serious relationship, but
it's just around the corner, Katie, if you want it.
My success rate is very low.
Listen, everybody listening to this podcast, she's amazing. Okay. You don't get that? You don't get people reaching out to you all the time for the podcast?
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, no. The problem
is... What do you do? Oh, my God. Yeah, no.
That's not the problem.
I'm sure the problem is not that, but I think it just occurred to me, like, oh, my God, you're running this podcast and you're single. You must have, like, DMs, like, all day long about, like, oh, my God, I need to date you.
Yeah. And I've dated 2 fans, and I'll tell you, I've lost 2 fans.
That is, okay, can I tell you, Katie, there is a book in that. There is a book in that. Okay, dating your fans. God. I love that. You have the title even, Dating Your Fans. I'll buy the book. I'll be your first book buyer. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Because they definitely have you on a pedestal, and, you know, they're following, they're in the girl on the thing, or they can't, it doesn't work out, but that's okay. I learned that the hard way. So nice lads, but it's a bit of, you know,
it never occurred to me until we had that conversation that, of course, you're going to get stuck in that situation all the time. Oh my God. Okay.
But yeah, no. So I guess it's actually better, I think, for a person who is like heavy on the internet to meet someone who doesn't know their internet presence and gets to know them first.
Yeah, that would be my husband. My husband does not want his face to be seen and on any of my Instagram. Like, seriously, you can sometimes hear him laughing, but I think there's a whole genre of public women, private men with them, just so you know. I think, like, I often meet women who are like out there speaking and on social media and stuff, and they're like, my partner is super private. And I was like, oh God, there's a whole group of us. So Katie, you can join the group when you find the private guy.
Yeah, I do think, I think the guy I'll end up will be like, but once they have to trust that I don't say their private business, that's one thing I always say to a guy on a first date. I'm like, I know I post a lot of jokes. A lot of them are jokes, or I've asked permission before, because I have dated guys who've enjoyed being involved in the jokes and stuff. So, or have done like videos with me and stuff. But I do give that a heads up. But I'm sure some private men are just terrified. They're like, I don't want her to get on and talk about my bits, even though I don't do that. I'm like, what the fuck? I haven't actually done that.
It's scary. People are scared. You know, I get it that people are scared, because I could see people thinking, oh my God, she's just dating me in order to get more funny stories.
And it's like, I don't want any more funny stories. I want to just start writing jokes about tea. I'm like, I feel like it's a joke at this stage that I keep dating like the most.
Well, you've seen that thing about tea and consent. Getting consent is like drinking a cup of tea. Please, I'm sure you've seen it.
No.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Are you serious?
No, I'm sorry to God.
It was like a cartoon?
No.
Drinking, getting consent is like a cup of tea. Like, if you ask somebody and they say no, the answer is no. If they ask you for tea and you start making it and they change their mind, the answer is still no. I'm going to send this to you right after this.
Do, because I did a joke. I got in a bit of trouble for it, but like only, and it was only by men because they interpreted it wrong. But I actually did a joke about how in Ireland, if you say you're coming back for tea, it means that sex might be on the table. But you might,
like, if you're going back up to your apartment for tea, you're,
yeah, it's usually an indicator that it might be, but it might still be a no. But you can kind of take that chance that it might be on the table. So
that's
so
like that's saying, would you like to come up for a drink?
Yeah, you know? I guess
yes,
we say tea.
Yes. Yeah.
But oh, we wow. would you say like
tea in Ireland? We're in America, I that's so backwards. I feel like Ireland is so much more the drinking place. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, I feel like now all the Irish listeners are going to be like, what are you talking about, Katie? I always say, come back for a drink.
Okay, but I would totally send you this tea is like consent. It's like, it's hysterical. You're going to, I can't believe you haven't seen it. I was okay, making great rounds a couple of years ago. Maybe it was 4 years ago. And
this is great. Anyway. My whole brand is tea. I'm a whore for tea. I love tea.
My God. I have to show you my tea box.
Okay. Yeah, I have one as well. Yes. Oh, so great. I'll have to send you Irish tea.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to do decaf. I'm an old lady, and so I need decaf. Okay.
I have some decaf Irish tea as well, because I'm getting totally. To that point as well.
All right. So after this podcast, we'll reconvene and do our tea thing.
Perfect. I want to ask you, so with the 100 points, then what you broke it down into was the 4 arousal, desire, orgasm, and pain. And I know a lot of women who've wrote into our podcast is the struggling with orgasm. But then even when you said about arousal and desire, is that the 2 of them are different? I didn't know that they were different. So that was really interesting. And then I guess pain as well. But I guess we'll start with arousal and desire.
Yeah, you and the rest of the world mix those two things up. Just, I know, because it's so easy to mix them up. But let me try to define them. And they're very overlapped. I don't want to suggest that they live completely independently. So desire is, I want to have sex. I'm interested in having sex. And arousal is, I get turned on when I'm having sex. And when you think about it, those are actually quite different. And the easiest way for me to explain how they're different is that I have patients who have no desire. They're let's say they're married for a bunch of years. They're not interested in having sex with their partner. And then they say to me, Bacheva, what's really crazy is when we do have sex, it's good. I get really turned on. I have an orgasm. It's really good. But then I don't want to do it again. And my husband is like, what the fuck? Like, I don't understand. Like, if it was bad sex, I get it. But it's not bad sex. It's good. And you had a great time. And so what's going on here? And I think that we're just starting to see that there may be different neurological pathways to those things. But I do know for sure that addressing them separately is super helpful for women. Because if I turn to you and I say to you, Katie, if I could wave a magic wand and the sex would be good, would you want to have sex? And you say to me, of course, definitely. Then I know that it's an arousal problem. Like it's you're not turned on. You want to have sex, but you're just not getting turned on. You can't get that like list of things you have to do out of your head. You're not getting like tingly and wet, and you know what I mean? So, and I feel like for women, separating out those issues can be so helpful to them. So, so that is desire is I want to have sex. Even theoretically, I want to have sex, right? Like I love this person. I want to have sex with them, or I just want to have sex in life, or I never, ever, ever want to have sex. And I'm not dating because I'm so disinterested in having sex. That's a desire issue. And that may live.
How do you change that though? How do you kind of change your desires?
So you go to chapter 8, 12 and 13.
Great.
So yeah. So you, the first thing I would do in this case is try to figure out maybe what's happening physically. Like, are you on birth control pills? Okay. Are you on anti-anxiety medication? Have you just had a baby? And so your hormones are a mess. Like there's all these physical things. Let's look at those physical things. Then I would say, now let's look at your brain. Have you shut your brain down? Can we get your brain going again? And many times I'll find that women, we can talk about fantasies. I think women just shut their brain down. They shut their brain down either because they feel like they shouldn't be thinking about certain things. They're ashamed to be thinking about certain things. They stopped using it. They just never used their fantasy life. And so it just disappeared, basically.
I'll tell you, I've never, when I was reading in your book about the fantasies, like I can orgasm no problem now that I figured out how to do it, but I never fantasize. I'm just like thinking of like the sky. I don't know what I'm thinking of. So it was interesting reading that and being like, oh Jesus, maybe I should start.
So Katie, I'm going to say to you, yes, you should. And I'm going to say to you right now, you don't need to. You're working. Thank you, Katie. You just hit it. You're working. You're at 100 points without the brain and the fantasies. Yeah. But at a point when you're a little bit older, maybe, or they put you back on some medication that maybe brings down your points a little bit. Or yeah, you just get older and your hormones aren't working as overtime as they are right now, Katie. Or you're in a long-term relationship and you love the person, but you know it's a little boring. Any of those things can take points away. That's when you're going to really need your brain. You need your brain to be able to turn on and turn off. And I talk about something called neuroplasticity, which sounds really big and complicated, but it just means that the parts of your brain that you're using get healthy and rich with blood and with neurotransmitters and cell rejuvenation. And when you stop using a part of your brain, it prunes it down. It stops, it just, the brain doesn't use that part anymore. So the more that you fantasize, the more that part of your brain gets better at doing what it's doing. And it's amazing how it can turn around. The problem is that women often feel like somehow fantasizing feels like something that should happen to you spontaneously, as opposed to like something you actually have to work on to get started. But it is something, if you haven't used that part of your brain, it's work in the beginning, and it's worth investing in. And so that is, I often talk with women with low desire. I'll talk about reading erotica more than, women seem to respond better to audio. Like I think listening to stories, erotic stories. Have you ever done that?
No, Amy? I didn't even know. It never even occurred to me that that was a thing.
Okay, really. So there's a website you might want to, or an app you might want to check out called Dipsy.
Okay.
That is actors reading erotic stories, and you can pick like vanilla sex, you could pick like hot crazy kinky sex, you could pick women on women, men and women, bisexual groups, even anyway. And they're actors reading the stories. And the more you can, I'm all about you're translating it to your own brain, right? Like the more you can get your own brain to fantasize, the better. You know why? Because you can make people look the way you want, sound. They can have this cute little Irish accent if you want that, or if you like a different accent, you can have that. So it's much better for you to be able to create scenarios in your own head. But to get started, reading erotica, listening to erotica, I find very, very powerful for women. Watching is good too, but somehow that works better for the guys. Guys out there, you can let me know if you think you agree with me, but I'm pretty sure in general, visual erotica works better for men and audio or reading works better for women.
Yeah, and I liked what you said as well about fantasizing someone else that you're having sex with a different partner, because like the only long-term relationship I had, yes, the sex does get a bit kind of, and we did things to spice it up, but I know at the time I would have felt guilty thinking about somebody else just because it would have felt like I was like betraying. So it was nice to read that and be like, oh no, that's okay.
Oh my God. So where, Katie, maybe you can even throw your 2 cents in this. Where did we lose our ability in our society to separate between reality and fantasy?
Yeah,
like just because you're fantasizing about this person doesn't mean you actually want to have sex with them now here. It's just fun. And I know women feel so guilty. I mean, I would say that a lot of women's sort of erotic fantasy life gets shut down because they feel so guilty. They feel guilty about fantasizing about other women. Oh my God, does that mean I'm a lesbian? Like, seriously, you just like to fantasize about women and whatever. And if you fantasize about Martians, it doesn't make you a Martian. Like our erotic brains like to go wild. So, you know, they fantasize about somebody besides. Are you seriously thinking to tell me that if you get into a long-term relationship, you think you're going to spend the next 30, 40, 50 years thinking about that one person? Oh my God, kill me now. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Why the hell? So, but women feel so guilty. And so they just shut it down. You know where else women feel guilty? It's so interesting. With fantasies about being overpowered.
Oh,
like,
right.
What we think of as rape fantasies. And women are like, they're like, I shouldn't be thinking about that. I shouldn't. It's terrible. It's not PC. It's wrong. There's no consent. And I'm like, listen, nobody could be more pro-consent than I am. Having said that, let's break down that fantasy for a second, right? You're making up the guy. Let's say it's a guy. Let's say it's two guys. You're making them up. You know exactly what they look like. You're deciding what they look like. You're deciding how they break into your house or whatever. You're deciding exactly what they're going to say to you and when. You're like the puppeteer, right? Mm-hmm. You're telling them exactly what things to say to turn you on. And then you're telling them exactly when to stop. It's all in your head. You're controlling the situation 100%. So in what way does this even vaguely smack of like real rape or real, like it's just a totally different thing. So relax, chill out, everybody. Like your fantasy is just your fantasy. It's fine. And the more you can embrace it, Katie, the better you get at it. So that is a really good way to go after desire.
That's great. That is really great for people to hear. Cause I know myself, this is going to sound maybe even slightly different, but if I'm watching a show and someone is getting assaulted on it, I do get a little turned on and I'm like, what's wrong with me? Just because I don't want anybody to be assaulted, but there's something about like that kind of power. And
yes, thank you for saying that. Like, there's something about, you know, how many women are in my office saying, oh my God, you know, I love my husband. I'm so glad I'm with him or with my partner. I'm just so glad. He's amazing. He's loving, he's caring. He brings me gifts. But I fantasize about the guy from high school who's in prison, who is like the motorcycle dude. Like, what is the matter with me? And I'm like, that was hot. And that's fine. And the more we acknowledge that, and the more you say, that's okay, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, and so yes, these power and sex are very complicated. And for many, many women, this idea of being so attractive and so desired that somebody's going to break the rules to have you is a very hot fantasy. Now, that does not mean you want to happen in real life. And that does not mean it is okay for anybody to push sex on anybody else. But it is okay to fantasize about those things. And it is okay to get pleasure in that and get turned on, Katie. And I'm so glad you just said that, because I feel like most people wouldn't admit it. And it's so important for people to hear that, Katie. So important. You are amazing. I love you.
No. I try to say it all, if that makes sense. I think also that it takes power out of it as well. When you say stuff out loud, you're like, it's not that big of a deal.
Right. So if you watch a scene where somebody's being overtaken in some way, raped or something, and you get turned on and you use that to go back to your partner and make them feel more loved and you to feel more loved, then it's great. Like, you've just made the world a better place.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how even you said, now this is slightly different, but you said it's like having an affair without an affair. So I guess like this, it's like, you're not going to walk down a dodgy street just because you enjoy this, but you can kind of replay it in your head when you're
and you wouldn't partner. Enjoy it if you walked down a dodgy street.
No.
I don't know, you'd be like scared as shit. You know?
Well, that's
like,
why that's why I feel guilty. And I'm sure that's why other women feel guilty, because you're like, I wouldn't really want this to happen, but yeah, I feel turned on. So it's like,
so I think that we have to separate between like fantasy and reality, and that the more we do that, the better. Yep.
No, that's great to hear. It's gonna be great for the listeners to hear as well. So then the other one was orgasm, which I only started orgasm over here. For me, it was I never masturbated at home. Now I know I need to masturbate in sex to orgasm. Even if I was near orgasm at home, I didn't like the release of the control and there was a bit of shame and stuff. So it was just taking the effort to work. Like, I spent like nights here just banging away at myself with my hand, trying to make it work. And then
did you use a vibrator?
No, I did it with my hand. I didn't get a vibrator until I started this podcast. And this woman, she's called Sex Shuppa. She lives in Ireland. She's American, but she sells a lot of great sex toys. And so she gave me one to try out, and then she gave me another one. And now sometimes I'll use it, sometimes I'll use my hand, depending on like if I need that, if I'm tired, or like it's like with the points. If I'm tired or I've had a stressful week, I'm going to need the vibrator. My hand isn't going to be able to go to town.
If you only have a minute and a half and you want to, yes, I did my PhD thesis on vibrators with women.
Wow.
That was my dissertation, was on vibrators with women. Because I think vibrators are like the most underused tool in a women's sexual arsenal. Like, it just makes it fun, easier to have an orgasm. So that's why all those times you were struggling, how long did it take you when you were working on the orgasm to have it? Like, how long did you work on it before you had it? The orgasm?
I'd say it was a few months at least, like working on masturbating and stuff and just getting over that feeling of that losing explosion control. And control. Yeah, losing control, which actually in turn made my brain better for actual real life stuff. And like, I was obviously like, oh, I was very regimented in my lifestyle. And since then, that was maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years. No, probably less, actually. Maybe we were doing the podcast too, and I think it was about 3 years ago, 3 or 4, I started orgasming properly. I can't really remember. I wish I'd wrote it down, but I definitely feel like I'm a much chiller person. But maybe that's also grown up. But I do think there is something very frustrating when you're trying to orgasm or you're having sex and it's not working, that it's just very agitating.
Oh, for sure. And people need to understand there's a lot of neurological factors that go into this too. Like, your nerves have to have a certain amount of stimulation in order to translate to the brain orgasm. And your brain has to kind of learn that pathway. So a lot of women who are learning will sometimes talk about their first orgasm as it almost feels like it was ripped out of them. Like, it almost feels like it was like, oh, wow. Like, that felt like something happened. It was good, but it was also weird. And then your brain is like, oh my God, now I know what she wants. Now I can do it. I can repeat it. It's much easier the second time.
Yeah.
And I feel like vibrators can make that so, external vibrators that go on the clitoris can just make that so much easier for women. And the more that we say it's fine to bring a vibrator into partnered sex, like there's solo sex that you're just having by yourself that people use vibrators for. And then people are often ashamed to use vibrators when they're having sex with a partner. And I feel like, well, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, we use electric lights. We don't expect everything to be candles, right?
Yeah.
We use glasses if you can't see. So if you're somebody who orgasms with the vibrator, then bring the vibrator into your partner's sex. Like, it should be a normal part of sex.
Yeah, my last 2 years of partners, I've always used a vibrator, or ever since I got it from Sex Shuppa. So actually, that's probably a lie. So a year and a half, I've
brought it in. Everybody who's listening, hear it again and again and again. Every time she has sex with a partner, she brings in the vibrator. And
not every time, but every partner I have.
Yes, so, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. There has been times where I haven't and my hand has been fine, but certain times where your hand cramps up, I always have the vibrator close by. Partners have asked me as well. A couple of partners have been like, oh, like our first sex, they've been like, oh, if you have a toy, if you want to bring it in. But they've obviously been with women who.
That is amazing.
Yeah,
Katie.
At least two.
Oh,
two,
my God.
Two of my partners in the last 2.5 years have.
This is where I feel like the world is changing in a really good way, because I sometimes talk to older women, even women in their 30s, you know, or 40s. And like, they all are like, oh, I feel like I shouldn't use a vibrator. He's going to think there's something wrong with me. And I'm like,
Yeah, use it. It's like my best friend. I use it like, I use my vibrator at least twice a week. I masturbate a lot though. I'm mad horny. When like that WAP song came out, I was like, that's me. I'm just walking down the road. I look like a tree. And I'm 30 as well. So it's not, I'm not like super young.
Yeah.
No, no, but I feel like,
yes.
I feel like I came later to the table, and I never, right. Like when I was reading some of your stories, I was like, I felt like empathy for those women because I don't want to ever lose that. So, you know, it's great even learning about menopause because you're like, okay, at least now I'll know when that comes, that if I do lose it. One thing I'll say about, for me, why vibrators are so amazing, because I don't know if any other women have experienced this where they're about to orgasm and they can't, and there's that feeling of regret, okay, and it feels like shame, and then you don't get the pleasure, so it kind of links with the shame, whereas, and your hand can't go further because you're kind of enjoying it, whereas the vibrator, you can't not lose, you have to lose control because it's not going to stop, it's going to keep going, and it gets you to that place because your hands sometimes link with your brain being like, oh, this isn't right, it cramps up, it's not. So I just think the vibrator for when you're not in that headspace is like God.
it's a total, no, it's so funny when people always ask me like, Do you get dependent on your vibrator? That's a question I get all the time. Do you get dependent? And so neurologically, nothing changes. You're not damaging your nerves. Nothing is changing. So it's really important for people to know that. But it does raise the threshold of how much stimulation you need temporarily. So like if you want to stop using the vibrator, you may have to stop for a couple of weeks. And this is not for everybody. This is some women. And then you can go back to your old threshold. But what I tell women is, it's kind of like cooking dinner. If I knew that I could like, you know, wiggle my nose and have dinner on the table, I would often choose not to sit there and chop and saute and, you know, because it's just so much more work. So I would get dependent on the nose wiggling because it would be easy to make dinner that way. But there'd be plenty of times I'd also be saying like, no, tonight I have time. And it would be really fun to like chop and dice and saute and, you know, flambe or whatever the hell. I'm not a great cook. So that's how I think of it with the vibrator. It just makes it easier.
Well, that's why I was like saying, when I say I don't always use it, but with every partner I have, but sometimes right. I'm just like, okay, I don't mind getting there slowly. Also, I'm at a place where I know what I like. So, but there'll be times where we'll go to have sex and I'll just be tired or my hand will be cramping up. So then I'll grab it. I'm not going to have any like, be like, oh, I wish shame. I could get to a place that I can get.
Yes. So. No. So that is exactly 100% where I feel like it makes sense to keep the vibrator, like do whatever you want to do. And if you're not getting super turned on or it's taking too long, or you're just really turned on, but you can't quite get there, just pull up the vibrator. Like,
yeah. So. And most lads, like if there's a lad, I feel like none of the lads since I've had it have had a problem with it. They're like, oh, I'm delighted. I don't want to have to figure out this puzzle.
Like, no, and it makes their life so much easier. Yeah. It just makes their life easier. And this I also say to women, like they love watching you get turned on and have an orgasm. Like that's such a turn on to them. So like, why would you not want them to be able to be part of that?
I know, I couldn't believe that no one told me about masturbation. And secondly, that no one told me to touch myself during sex. Like it's literally been like watching lads get so turned on when I'm masturbating. I'm like, oh my God, if I had known that, if I had just been like, this is fine to do, it would have changed my sex life.
Do you know, do you watch Bridgerton? Have you watched the show Bridgerton?
I shared your clip on my Instagram story.
Oh, that's okay. All right. Because they did that so well, right? He tells her how to masturbate. Like that was on, that was like, I wanted to jump off the sofa and cheer. He tells her how to masturbate. And two, the first time they have sex together, he says to her, use your hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. I was like, Jesus, that's based 200 years ago. And still today, people don't know about that. We actually had a woman write in and she said she's struggling with orgasming with a partner, but can do it solo. Do you have any quick advice for that? But it could be multiple. It could be any of those point factors. It's probably better if she goes on and takes your test.
Okay. So no, I have a lot of questions.
Okay,
I'm like looking at you funny because I'm thinking, what does that even mean? Does that mean that she can do it with her own hand and she can do it with a vibrator?
Yeah.
Or, but she can't do it with intercourse because almost nobody, 3 out of 10 women can have an orgasm from intercourse. You know that, right?
I don't know that. That's, I can't, I've never orgasmed from.
Okay. So if she's thinking that only 3 out of 10 women can have an orgasm from intercourse, 30%, 70 to 80% can have one with a hand or a mouth, and 95% can have one with a vibrator. So those are the statistics that people should keep in mind. So if she's saying I can't have orgasm from intercourse, there's nothing wrong with you. If she's saying I can have them with my hand at a vibrator, but I can't have them when he's in the room with me.
I think that's what she meant. Yeah.
So that is an interesting question. If that's what she meant, which I, then I have to say, like, is it because you're embarrassed to use your hand or a vibrator when he's in the room with you? Sort of like we were talking about Katie, like if somehow she feels like that's not an okay thing, then we need to talk about that. And he needs to be understand that that is a perfectly normal thing. And you're hearing Katie say she does it all the time. And that's what you do when you're having sex with somebody else. You use your own hand. He uses his hand. He uses his mouth. You use your hand. You use a vibrator. All those things are 100% acceptable. If she's saying, well, I use my hand and I use a vibrator, but somehow I get stuck with him in the room. That's, you know, I somehow just can't get, which is very rare. But if that is really what she's saying, then usually what I suggest is that people sort of do this in like stages, like have him be in the bathroom next to the room or have him be in the bed next to you with the lights off, but not touching you while you masturbate. Yeah. People get past it really fast. So, but I think defining what she's actually saying is really, really important here so that we could be helpful to her.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So she didn't define exactly what she was saying, but I'd say as well, there's other women as well who feel, you know, when you were saying it's not all in your head, but I think there is aspects of it being in your head when I know that I've had friends who are embarrassed by how they look. And I think that comes into even just life in general. Like if you fall over, if you laugh at yourself, then it's funnier, you know? So it's kind of like if you're nervous about your face you're pulling, it's like you're hot no matter what. Like
yeah, totally sex education had a whole episode on the fact that she kept putting a pillow over her face when she would have an orgasm, remember?
Yeah,
because she was so embarrassed about that. And I do think we call that, sex therapists call that spectatoring, when you can't let go because you're too busy watching yourself kind of to see how you're doing. It is hard to get out of that. And sometimes people suggest that marijuana is really helpful for that. And there was a section in my book where I'm like, I can't really talk about marijuana because it's not really legal in New York now. And
I read that. So,
but you can do a lot of like sort of learning to love yourself and learning to love your body is really, is really a big piece of this as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. And just kind of like, I definitely think I would have been like that as well. So for anybody listening, but I think a big thing of it was just being like, fuck it. Like, you know, you are who you are what you look like. If you think you're hot shit, everybody else is going to think you're hot shit. Like I have one friend here and I mean, he's not good looking. No offense to him. He's not a good looking lad, but he is hot because he walks around like he fucking is the most confident fecker I've ever met. He's so attractive. But if you actually looked at him, you'd be like, this is not a physically attractive, but it's confidence. He walks the walk, he talks the talk or whatever. And it's inspirational because you're like, yeah, actually. And some of the most, if you just actually think you're attractive and you're enjoying yourself, it's like, that's so much more attractive than if you were like, oh my God, my mascara leaked on my face. Nobody sees that.
I have to say something, which is like this, I actually haven't talked about it almost in any other podcast I've done. So I, a year ago, had bariatric surgery, which also does a whole, sets your hormones. There's so much we don't understand. It just resets your hormones. It has very little to do with what you're eating.
What is that?
Oh, it's when they cut away part of your stomach.
Okay.
Jess. It's like weight loss. It's weight loss surgery. Yeah. So I lost like close to 100 pounds. Right. So the reason I'm saying this is because I'm 5 feet tall and I used to be close to 100 pounds, 90 pounds more than I am now. And I think I was still really hot and sexy. And I really, and honestly, between you and me, my boobs were way better than they are now. They are way better. And I wasn't, now look, I was lucky because I was in a situation where I was with a partner who thought I was hot and sexy and beautiful. But I'm telling you, as somebody who sees women all over the place, your size, because I know I hear this from women all the time. They think, oh my God, he must be looking at my jiggly stomach. Oh my God, he thinks you're hot because you're in the room with him and he thinks you're hot and he loves looking at your body and your skin is beautiful. And we have to get out of our heads and stop thinking that we have to look like supermodels and be skinny in order to be sexy. Yeah.
I'll even give you a good example. I had acne all over my arse, like bad arsene. Bad acne, arse, whatever. And I ended up going to dermatology again and fixed. But the whole time I was seeing this guy who I have actually talked about on the podcast, and he it just didn't work out. But this is one thing I will say that was really good about him. We were seeing each other for 3 months. Eventually ended up getting the cream and we hooked up a month later. And I was like, oh, look how great my arse looks. And I love doggy style. Doggy style is my favorite. And he was like, what are you talking about? It always looked like that. And I was like, you never noticed my acne all over my arse? He goes, no, I never. He was like, you didn't. And I was like, I did. But see, this is the thing. People don't. It's like if I have a spot or I have a scar here. You probably didn't notice that until I pointed that out, because it's not something you wouldn't have even noticed. Now you probably say that I pointed out, and totally. I just never pointed out my acne arse. But he was just like, no, I just was enjoying the moment. I was in the moment. It's never anything. So
we need to so I'm telling you, I feel like anybody looking at me would say, oh my God, you must feel so much hotter now. And I didn't do the surgery because how I looked. I did it because I couldn't move as much. I love to dance and I love to walk and I just couldn't do that anymore. But if I tell you, I laugh, my boobs were so much better when I was fatter. They just was. And believe me, at every size and shape, you can feel something like there's something wrong with your body. Or you can say, like you said, fuck it. This is my body. I am beautiful. I am hot. And you know what? There is something to fake it till you make it. Act hot, act beautiful, act confident. And you know what? You start feeling that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. And like me and my roommate, she's a massive arse. And I'm always like, oh, I'd love that arse. And she's always like, oh, your stomach's so flat. I'd love your stomach. So it's like, you can go down that road. You can find everything. Exactly.
We just
do
this to ourselves, don't we? It's crazy. Yeah.
Also, other things you said, okay, so that I wanted to hit on. Okay, so arousal, desire, orgasm, and then pain. What does pain look like? And I know a friend who has vaginismus.
Vaginismus.
Yeah, so that's a good one for women to know, that there's actual real condition.
Oh my God, I will just tell you, vaginismus is a condition where you either can't get a penis in the vagina or it just hurts like hell. You can get it and it hurts like hell. You're looking at me like it's 1 out of 10 women have this. This is what's really crazy. 1 out of 10, it's really common. And every woman who has it, or most of them, feel like it's only them. It's like this dirty secret that nobody knows about. There's something wrong with them. They're totally broken. They go down this deep, dark rabbit hole. I mean, I almost feel like I can meet women and within 20 minutes of talking to them, know, because some of them just don't date, or they just, it's just really, they get into it. And I will tell you that when somebody calls me up and says, I have vaginal pain, and they call our center, it's not like I can say we can cure everything. We're not magic, right? But I can promise you that if you have vaginal pain, in 99.99999, we can make it better. And vaginismus in general tends to talk about tight muscles. Your muscles are tightening up, and your brain and your vagina have stopped communicating. And so you need to work on both of those things, getting your brain kind of going and connected to your vagina, and getting your muscles to relax and allow entrance of a penis. And we have a lot of ways of treating it, and it's 100% treatable. And I know I'm laughing a little bit, Katie, because if people go to my Instagram, Dr. Bacheva, I sometimes do lives with vaginismus patients. Every vaginismus patient who walks in says, but I'm the worst one. You've never seen anybody as bad as me, and you're not going to be able to help me. That is every single thing. And I'm telling you, I have seen somebody as bad as you. I can help you, and it's totally treatable. And do not be like those women who have come in after 11 years of being married or 21 years of being married, and who just have, it's sort of destroyed their sex life, because you can have good sex without intercourse, but usually people feel so crappy about themselves that they just avoid it. So if you're listening to this podcast and you have vaginismus or pain of any sort, don't let it, definitely read the book, but get help, because it's not worth letting your life be destroyed by this when it's so treatable.
And two of my girlfriends have it. So I'm sure that's just one, two that have opened up about it. So I'm sure there's probably more.
Send them to me. I will make them better.
You should do a live actually with Riley Lassen. She's a comedian. She works for some radio show. She's great, but she talks about it openly. So she might be a great person for you guys to do an Instagram live together. She talks about using.
What's her name?
Riley Lassen.
Introduce us.
I'll introduce you. Introduce she's us. Amazing, because she has ovary cysts, and she also talks about having to get wigs and really, really amazing. How she's talked about to me anyway. She's talked, and I've heard her talk about it on podcasts, but having to, slowly incorporate penis into her life. I don't think she's had a lot of intercourse because of this.
Right. Yeah, it makes, of all the things, this makes me the saddest, because it's so treatable. Now, she may have endometriosis, she might have extra other things on top of it. But for people who have straight vaginismus, which is most women, it is so fixable and so not complicated. We had a patient who came in 11 years, she was married. They weren't having any kind of physical contact anymore because she felt so crappy about herself. Her husband went off and had an affair. So she finally came in. 10 weeks later, she was 100% fine.
Yeah.
Like it was so treatable.
Well, I think that this works like for everything. And I know for Irish people specifically, and then there's people who listen to the podcast who aren't Irish, but feel a similar thing that in our culture it is, you always just go, everything's grand. So you don't talk about it. You just keep getting on with things. Getting on with things is a big thing. And I think that's actually very bad. And I think like for me with the acne iris, it took me 2 years before I went to the dermatologist. That's ridiculous. I should have just went. And then when I went, it was cleared up in a month. So it's like whatever problem, or my roommate, I just forced her to go to the gynecologist. She hasn't gotten a smear test in like at least her whole life, maybe. And she's in her 30s.
Does she have vaginismus?
No. But this was just, let's say, a smear test just for HPV, but only for like, as in, I think people won't go to the doctor. They won't go ask about things. They won't go get things fixed.
Why doesn't she want to go to the doctor?
Oh, because it just seems like a bit of an effort. Like, I'm fine. Okay. I don't need to get a smear test. And I'm like, you're fucking 33. You could have cancerous HPV. And it's only because I keep like ramming it down her throat. She's like, I'll fucking go. But like, it's just, you know, it's like, if you have anything, like any little, just go and talk about it. Like, instead of just, like you said, just living with it. It's like people are like metaphorically cutting themselves a bit of a self-torture. Yes. Like, why wouldn't I just go get the simple fix?
I think it's because there's so much shame involved. Shame, they feel like they feel like they're really broken. And
or the fear to hear out it's something worse. Like, I'm sure my roommate, she was probably like, oh, I don't want to find out if it's some cancerous HPV. I'd rather just not wake up one day, you know, because you're just the fear of not.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. So it's great that you're getting that message out.
Yeah. What else I want to add? Oh, you said intercourse is, or sex is not just intercourse. That was brilliant to hear.
Okay, so you've used it a few times since then. And I was like, okay, Bacha, but don't interrupt Katie and correct her. So
it's great.
Yes, no. So yes, I'm always saying that intercourse and sex are not the same thing. They're not synonymous. You know, it kills me because I feel like this is a man's world, like a man's, you know, idea that, you know, sex is intercourse. For most women, the most pleasurable part of sex may not be intercourse. Some women it is, but oral sex is sex. Using your hands is sex. Using a vibrator on somebody or on yourself with the person there, all of those things are sex. Intercourse is great. I'm all about intercourse. You should be able to have intercourse, but it's just one way of having sex. And the more we separate out those things, Katie, the better a sex life we'll have. Because if you keep thinking of sex as just being intercourse, it gets freaking boring. Like it gets freaking boring, right? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's great for the male listeners to hear this too, because I think more and more men are having performance anxiety and I think taking the pressure off intercourse, like I know my last partner would have performance anxiety and I was like, when you lose it, we can just do the other stuff. Actually, the other stuff is just as pleasurable for me. And that took a lot of pressure. And then in turn, he ended up not having performance anxiety anymore because he was like, oh, if I lose it, I can just... And I'm like, yeah, that's actually, I squirt from hand stuff. So,
Katie, we're going to give you an honorary sex therapist degree because that is totally, no, you are the sex therapist on the men's side, Paul Nelson, he's constantly saying that to guys. He's like, you know, stop telling me about your penile problems. We're going to fix those. But, you know, you have 10 fingers and 10 toes and you have lips and you have a mouth and you have a tongue. And there's a lot of things you can do with those things that are more pleasurable to your female partner than your stupid penis that you're just so obsessed with. So, so can we just add that in turn does exactly what you just said, which all of a sudden the men are like, oh, this poor little penis does not have to get all the pressure all the time because it's not the be all and end all of sex. And where we came with this idea that the bigger, the harder, the thruster, the better is just not the case. I'm just not the case. Most women do not like a huge penis. Mm-hmm. Some women do, but most women, I get way more complaints about a penis that's too big than a penis that's too small. Women do not like a big penis and they certainly don't like pounding. I mean, some women do like it again and some women like pounding sometimes, but big penis is pounding, which is like, it seems to be like the gold standard these days. Like, where the fuck did that come from? I want to know. Like, it's so ridiculous. So,
yeah.
So we need to really change the mentality of what sex is. Sex is, I like to call sex anything where one person or more people together are trying to have an orgasm. That would make it sex as opposed to cuddling or kissing or making out or right. But that doesn't mean you succeed in having an orgasm. And it could be five people and it could be one person. And oral sex is sex and using a hand is sex and using a vibrator is sex. And if you and I climb into bed naked and we like are all over each other and then we both masturbate to orgasm, that's really good sex.
Yeah, yeah. And I like what you said as well about the thump and pounding thing. I don't know. And a lot of women complain about that as well. And I think for men, they just think maybe that they're, because I know my last partner, he would do the thumpy to pound thing. And he was a bit younger, but I carefully brought in, I was like, I think that might be also not helping with your erection because you're getting overheated, you're sweating, like, let's just take it slow. And he was like, oh, okay, I thought that. And I'm like, no, I definitely want slow. because while you're pounding, I can't get to where I want to get to in my head. And I know there's some women who love that, but I think it's like also, yeah, just having that conversation. But I think for a man, like, if you're not 100% fit and you're trying to bang away and you're sweating, of course you're gonna lose your erection.
I mean, honestly, I think that's porn. I think men watch porn and they see these guys like slamming away, and the women are like looking like they enjoy it. When most women are like, if you're under a guy who's pounding away, you're like, oh my God, this is Jackhammer City. I don't know, like.
And then you, and then for the guy, if you hear a girl be like, are you nearly going to come? It's probably because they're like, can I just get this done? You're banging away at me here.
Just finish up. No, it's totally, you're 100%. And then sometimes also, to be fair, Kitty, is that guys have started masturbating like very hard with their hands really, really hard. And then they need to do the pounding in the vagina. So then if you're a guy and you're listening to this, slow it down. Try to just take it easier with the masturbating. Try to use your hand a little gentler. Try to just be sort of make the whole thing a little bit more slow and a little less poundy and thumpity thump or whatever. And then you'll be able to do it better in a vagina without causing your partner to like get a hole ripped through her.
That's actually great. Cause I just put up a little question box, like any quick questions for today. And a guy wrote in, is masturbating too much a problem? And it is interesting that you say that. Cause I know the last partner, he had to, when I was saying all this stuff, he definitely would masturbate really hard. And he was like, oh, I think I need to stop watching porn and masturbating as much. And that helped him a little bit as well. So like, it was nearly like the 100 points for the man too.
Yes. Next,
he also started drinking green tea as well. So yeah. I don't know what was working, but he was trying everything, in fairness to him.
No, exactly. So, you know, usually you can't masturbate too much really, unless it's getting in the way of your life, but you can masturbate the wrong way. You can masturbate in a way that makes it just not easily transferable to sex with somebody else.
So I guess if
you know, if you masturbate all the time, all day long, sometimes it's harder to get another erection and ejaculate, you know? So for all those reasons, like, just take it easy, take a chill pill. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. So it is actually, so even for lads, this 100 point system can work as well in regards to looking at your life, your diet, your mental health, your physical health, all of this stuff. So it's all just kind of like taking a step back and being like, what? Like, because even I read up like, because you said something, sometimes too much serotonin can be bad for orgasms. Correct. But there's not a lot of research. And then I read up that a lot of your diet is really important for sex. So I think you mentioned SHBG. We tried to do an episode on it, me and a different girl, but we still weren't able to figure out what the SHGB really is. She was a scientist.
SHBG, sex-binding globulin.
Yeah, what is that while you're here?
It's a protein that your body makes that binds up to the testosterone. So let's say your body has 50 milligrams of whatever, 50 molecules of testosterone running around, and this SHBG grabs it. So it makes it not usable for the rest of your body. So it's not, so one of the things we measure when people come to our center is how much testosterone do you have and how much SHBG do you have? Because your SHBG is going to hold that testosterone and not let your testosterone move around your body.
So that's bad, SHBG.
You want low SHBG.
And diet can affect that.
So I haven't seen a lot of research on that. I'd be curious. But I do know birth control pills can affect it. It gives you a very, very high SHBG. So for example, if your testosterone comes back at, I don't know, 50, but your SHBG is 120, now you have almost no testosterone, because even though your testosterone might be fairly normal, there's only two parts that are left circulating in your body, right? So does that make sense or no?
Kind of, but so you need...
If your birth control pills raise this SHBG and this SHBG grabs onto whatever testosterone you have...
It's going to affect your...
Exactly. So getting off birth control pills can lower your SHBG, and your SHBG then leaves the testosterone to circulate and for you to use it in your body.
And the testosterone for women helps with arousal, right?
Desire, arousal, and possibly orgasm.
Wow. See, Not human.
And for men, and for men, it's exactly the same thing as for men, and for it's just more direct. And so for men, it's like a light switch when their desire drops. And often, if they're abusing like steroids, they can shut down their own testosterone production, which makes it harder for them to get turned on or have a libido. But for men, if you give them back their testosterone, you see it like this. I'm snapping. You can't hear on this podcast. But for women, you give them testosterone, it really helps. It's a little more slow and a little more gradual, and we're very careful in how we do it. But it can have a huge impact as you get older, you have babies.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear that there's just so many possible solutions.
Right.
Just trying it all.
There are so many of them.
And I think we covered this. You were talking about, okay, because we said fantasy. So that was limerence. Limerence?
Yeah. Limerence is the newness of the relationship.
So like novelty.
Yes. And that has to do with sort of trying to figure out what things were the elements that went into a new relationship that gave you all those points, like the little bit of nervousness, the little bit of insecurity, you know, the unknown, the little more dangerous piece of it.
Which is great. I love this. There was a story. I won't ruin it because people need to read the book, but there was a story about a woman who loved her husband for all of the great qualities, but didn't have the danger quality that we were kind of saying early, and then bringing that in. But for people, definitely read that chapter, because that was like something that I think I absolutely date narcissists. It's been a string of narcissists and kind of egotistical men, and the sex is amazing. And then the last partner was a very kind, nice, and the qualities I would want there. But, you know, there was a lot of, so for me, I'm like, okay, I want to find a nice, a person I could build a life with, but also keep that kind of like, but not stay with someone because of the sex.
Well, no, but I think I have a whole chapter on that. I think it's such a, right. We want to marry or partner with people who are good and kind and supportive, but we can't whitewash men of all their, what they want and their aggression and their deep emotions, because that's in the end very hot.
Yeah. And that was so true. So true, because the last guy I was dating was very nice and sweet and stuff, but he got pissed off at me one of the days, and I was like, oh, hello.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to put you in my next book, Katie. Oh, my God. But I do need to go
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I will say to end this episode, for women to listen to the, or for men even, there's like the thing about myths on male sexuality. That was the last thing I wanted to say, but that was brilliant as well. So I think anybody who, that's a really good chapter to read, because I think we have a lot of myths that's not true, and it's, yeah, that like men are actually just more like us and what they need and want. So I thought that was
great. That's the chapter called Men Are From Mars. Maybe we have to start exploring Mars a little bit more.
Yeah, it's right? Great, because like, we put all these perceptions on our partners, and it's like they're not thinking that. You just, it's like going, oh, I'm dating an Irish girl, she must be a drunk. I'm not.
It's true.
Yes,
that is hysterical. No, thank you so much for having me on. This was such a fun conversation. And you are like, I feel like I should put you in the book. Because
I'd love to be. I'll be in your book.
It was so great, Katie. And you and I have to get together to do a tea thing at some point.
Absolutely, I'd love that. And I'll link you with Riley, and I'm going to put all your information in the bio, and I'll put your Instagram handle and everything. So thank you. What is your Instagram handle, actually, so people can
find it? Dr. Batsheva, Dr. like Dr. Batsheva, Batsheva. The name that we can pronounce. Yes.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. I'm blowing your kiss.
Bye.
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 Hey everybody, thank you for listening. Please go follow Dr. Batsheva on Instagram. Her link will be in the description of this episode. And I love you all. Thanks for always listening, and I hope you're having a lovely week. And again, feel free to DM or email your stories or advice or anything you want us to talk about, or any guests you want on. I have a few exciting guests coming up in the next few weeks. So yeah, and look, if you can rate, review, all of that. And if you want to sign up to the Patreon, the video for this is on the Patreon. So /The Shift Podcast. And this, as usual, the solo eps are up there as well. So yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.